Hi, and welcome back to The Watch Report, powered by Watchbox. I am your host, Zach Grego, and today we are going to cover...
Whoa, stop. Hold on a second. What?
Who's
Where's
that?
The accent? What happened to the accent?
What accent are you referring to?
The posh English one. We wanted your posh English one to play off against our broad Scottish accents.
This is my accent, so this is, you know, how I normally speak.
No, it's not. When you do those videos with your hands in them, you sound all posh and, you know, like English.
I think you might be thinking of someone else.
No, I'm not. You're the guy that does all those Watchfinder videos with the hands.
No. So I am from Watchbox, not Watchfinder.
Watchbox? I thought they made, like, little dinky toy cars.
No, that's Matchbox. I am Zach Rego from Watchbox.
I think I saw you in that film with The Rock and David Hasselhoff.
Oh, I believe you're thinking of Zac Efron.
So who are you?
I'm Zach Rego from The Watchbox, the channel with Tim Mosso, Josh Thanos, Brian Govberg.
Oh, you know Tim Mosso? Why didn't you just say that in the first place? Welcome to Scottish Watches.
Well, thank you guys, I appreciate it, and, glad to be talking to you guys, now that we've got, who I am, down.
Welcome to the Scottish Watches podcast with special guest from Watchbox, Mr. Zach Rego. How are you, Zach?
It's a beautiful day in lovely Philadelphia, so I can't complain. A little bit of an interesting commute on my way in, but after the hour and a half drive, I'm excited and ready to go.
And how long should your commute take you?
Roughly 30 minutes. It's about 25. And yeah, so Friday traffic, the old Philly surprise, but not too bad. I got to do a little bit of interesting reading this morning and stuff like that, so I can't complain about those long rides.
Good. Oh, so you're getting public transport?
Yes, I do frequent Uber.
Right.
Yeah, they got me hooked up on this platinum membership because I take the same route every day back and forth. So they said, you do that enough, you can get this flat rate. So I'm using that up.
Right. Americans always have a very different understanding to what public transport is because we would just call that a taxi.
Public transport
would mean you having to get on a train and share space and breathing and, body odor smells with the great unwashed rest of public, like a bus or a train or something like that. You just travel in style in the morning. You're effectively just getting chauffeured to your work every morning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess public transport is a little bit different here in the States. Everyone drives in private cars with drivers, mostly limousines. People get around differently, I guess, in different countries.
And that's where all the pateks are. So all the pateks are on the wrists of all these people in the posh cars.
Yeah, exactly. So the drivers are wearing, more Calatravas, while the people in the back, more Nautiluses, perpetual calendars, those kind of things.
Ah, very good. Very good.
Well, that's quite a good segue into what have you got on the wrist today?
I myself actually have a watch on that I am trying to convince myself to trade in for. It is a very affordable option, and I think the look is just divine. It's the Omega, the CK2998, the new release that they just put out pretty in the last year, 2 years. The limited edition piece, sort of honoring, this original watch that was actually introduced in 1959. One of the more iconic Speedmasters. I've got it. There's the two versions that I really love, sort of the blue version and the black version. But I really do go for, black and red. So the chronograph hand with that red, the Speedmaster in red. I think, I remember you guys were talking about the Daytonas in the last episode, I believe. And so this is sort of my poor man's, sort of nice-looking chronograph that I wish was a Daytona, but I get the Omega there. So I'm really thinking about trading it in, and honestly, right after this recording, I might go talk to my pricing director.
All right, okay. So, as it's a Speedmaster, Ricky's your man, because he's now obsessed with the things, seeing as he bought one last week. So you guys can be all talking about Tuesdays and things.
Speedy buddies.
Speedy buddies. Yeah.
Speedy buddies. Yeah.
Wrist pals.
Speedy yeah. buddies for life.
Yeah, I'll send you that bumper sticker for your car.
Thank you.
Dearie me. So,
right, Rick, what have you got?
So I'm just going to ask. So, you can, I've always wondered this, when you like walk into the office in the morning, can you go to the safe and just kind of wear what you like for the day and then just give it back? So you can go in and wear the AP for the afternoon or the Elang and Zona for the morning.
So this first answer is going to be for what my boss hears.
all right, okay, yeah.
So this is the first answer. Okay. Absolutely not. Our right. security is top of the line for insurance purposes. You know, all watches must be kept in the vault under secure surveillance. And we, you know, really make sure that no watch, you know, really comes out of the vault for any other reason other than shipping. So that's where it's going to cut there. And then we're going to do this second answer where I actually tell the truth.
Okay.
So here we go. So absolutely. So I love in the morning, get my coffee, check my emails. And then after that, I like to go into the vault and search around. Now, inventory does not like that. But I, you know, usually spend about 15 minutes every morning trying to find one watch that I'd love to try on. So that's probably the coolest part about working here is that, you know, 50 feet away from me, I've got a vault full of some of the coolest watches, you know, available out there. So, you know, I do use that on a frequent basis to, you know, send to, maybe some, you know, girls, you know, who I want to show that I've got, you know, some nice watches or anything like that. But, you know, clients always appreciate when I just, you know, send them over a picture of the watch that I, you know, decided to take out that day.
Very good. And, is there anything that you couldn't buy just because it would be so ridiculously expensive that you find yourself gravitating towards and maybe trying to wear once? Or have you ever taken something so that you can wear it maybe at the end of the week for something and kind of hidden it around the corner somewhere so that nobody knows where it's gone?
So, yes. So there's two
hypothetically
things.
Are you going to have a job? Are you going to have a job at the end of this podcast?
So my lawyer has told me that I should be saying allegedly after all of these statements.
That works.
So I'm going to start.
You learn quick.
Yeah, I'm going to start doing that. He's sitting across from me, so he's shaking my head, saying I shouldn't answer this, but I'm going to. So one watch that I wish, you know, I could afford at this point, unfortunately, in the United States, student loan debt is at an all-time high, and so if not, I would go for this, but at this time, an AP 15400 blue dial. We get them in ever so often. Uh-huh. You know, it's not ever so often that, you know, the normal collector gets to see the blue dial. You know, you get the black, the, you know, the silvery white. But every time that we have one, I get an opportunity to put it on. You know, I pretend, I close my eyes for 15 minutes, pretend this is my watch. And that's something that in the future I will 100% have in my collection. I just think, you know, anything that Gerald Genta has put his hands on, it's beautiful. Yeah. But, you know, that one in particular, you know, that it's so comfortable. The look of it is incredible. And it's one of those watches that when I have wore it, I get the most reaction from, you know, people in the office that might not be in the watch industry, really, you know, accountants, you know, the lawyer we've got on staff, you know, they, you know, like the look of it. So that's probably one that I'll try, to work on. You know, there is,
what do you think of the new update?
So, you know, I think it is a good update. I think that it was easily overshadowed by maybe something else they did.
Smidgen.
But yeah, I love AP. I think that, you know, they do such great stuff that they're, you know, really known for over the years. And, you know, they make small adjustments to, you know, things like the Royal Oak Offshores. You know, the Royal Oak Offshores, they get a lot of colors and cool straps. And, you know, they change the bezel, you know, ceramic, rubber, all of that stuff. I think that when they do that kind of stuff, you know, smaller changes to what their, you know, really bread and butter is, you know, I think that's great. You know, when they go too crazy, obviously they're going out on a limb, but, you know, small changes that they're, you know, they're making to these Royal Oaks are, you know, exactly what the people who love those Royal Oaks already, you know, really want to see. You know, I think that that Royal Oak with that sort of golden, you know, honey dial, is such a slight change. You know, just a new color that you probably haven't seen on a dial for a Royal Oak like that. And, you know, that kind of stuff is exactly what I want to see.
Yeah,
absolutely. So, Ricky, are you Speedmaster clad as well?
I was yesterday, so I'm actually wearing my budget James Cameron today, which is the Seiko Paddy Prospects Diver Special Edition.
Very nice, very nice. This is the one you got from Is this the one you got from Germany?
No, this one I got from eBay end of last year.
Ah, right, okay.
eBay Switzerland. And, ah, right. Yeah, it was at a ridiculously cheap price, which made me a little bit suspect. Mm-hmm. But no, it's turned out to be really good. Although it might be fake because the bezel aligns.
A Seiko diver with an aligned bezel for under $1,000, £1,000.
Yeah, well, it was 500 quid. Uh-huh. I mean, usually these are about £900, uh-huh. and this one came in at 500 delivered, sneaked through customs and everything, so no hassles at all. And I've never seen a watch with such impressive loom. Uh-huh. It's,
oh, well,
it's really nice.
I reckon I can beat your loom today.
Can
yes.
you?
Yes.
Why? What are you wearing?
I am wearing my X-Men watch. Otherwise known as the Ball Engineer 2 Magneto.
Ooh.
And so my loom is tritium tubes, which for anyone that's never seen these before are just phenomenal. So they are actually radioactive, so they don't need light to activate them.
So you aren't really looking to have any more children?
Nope. My childbearing days are over. So
yeah, keep your hands above your head when you're wearing that.
I'm all for the radioactivity now.
Okay.
All for the radioactivity. So, and it's also. It's
I always
also
did say you work in a sterile environment.
Thank you. It's also. It's got a trick shot, which is that the case has this kind of cyclops eye on it. That if you turn the bezel, the case back closes over, which is probably of absolutely no use. It allegedly increases the anti-magnetic properties, but it's just quite cool. And that's really the only reason I bought it, let's face it.
Such a gadget.
I am still not going to be working at CERN anytime soon, and so I have no requirement for something that can stand the magnetism that this thing can. But it's got a cool thing on it that you can spin. So I'm game and I'm in. So that's it. There we go. Cool.
Good.
So,
well, did you hear the news?
What's the news?
Well, there's lots of news, but the main news is we finally got the podcast on Spotify and Google Podcasts.
Hey!
Woohoo! Going up the world.
Yeah.
So three people can now listen to it.
Places. Well, did you not tell me that we kind of hit number 4 in the iTunes podcast chart briefly?
Rather incredulously, we did in the hobbies section, which is where we are clad. We appeared at number 4 very briefly. And this will mean absolutely nothing to Zach, but will mean lots to a certain generation of potential listener to this podcast in the UK. We were 2 places below Gardner's Question Time from the BBC.
Jesus.
That is a life's ambition for me complete. Something I was doing was on the same page as something gardening related and the BBC. I was a happy boy when I saw that. I have no idea how accurate these stats are, but we were briefly at number 4.
I gotta say that I listened to it probably about 1,000 times, so I may have helped.
Thank you. That's great.
So you're welcome, guys.
So you're the reason why we're now at number 3. You're now the reason why we're at number 300, because you've stopped listening.
Yeah, exactly. I took a day off, and that, you know, happened. So I'll get back on all of my burner accounts that I'm reviewing. So I'll make sure to keep that up
for
you guys.
So this day that you took off, was this anything to do with snow and skiing?
Yes. I believe you're referring to my my trip last weekend. Took a nice little trip to sort of the Park City, Utah area, skiing at Deer Valley for the first time there, but boy was it nice to get away from Philadelphia for a few days. And I gotta say that Utah, you may not know this, but Utah is one of the most beautiful places in the world. And I'm sure me in America, you know, you guys are in Scotland, you know, on a grassy meadow, as I believe us Americans imagine, the cliff sides and you know, it's a beautiful
haggis running around.
Exactly. That's the picture that we have of Scotland here. And I, you know, it probably means nothing to you, but Utah is definitely one of the most beautiful places in the world, I'd have to say.
Good stuff. And a quick question, just because I am going skiing shortly. What did you wear skiing watch-wise? I'm looking for some suggestions. Because my Tissot T-Touch is running out of battery, and if I send it away, it'll not be back in time for me going skiing.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, so there are a few different, I think, schools of thought. You know, people that aren't too into, you know, that are into watches, but not just mechanical watches, really just something to wear on the wrist.
Yes.
You know, I saw a lot of people with their, you know, Apple watches, their Fitbits, because they want to track, you know, how much exercise they're actually doing, because it's probably the first exercise of the year for some of these people. But other than that, I personally grabbed something from the vault. And again, we might have to have this story go twice. I'll do one for my boss and the other one for everyone else.
We'll send them one edit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they'll get this other copy. So I got...
Shout out to Brian.
I'm on his good side right now, so if we could try and keep that the best possible way, that'd be great. But I grabbed the Raymond S300 from the vault.
Very nice.
I did that because I remember reading about Jake Meyer, who did the 7 summits and you know, went to K2 in 2018 as a, you know, Braemont ambassador, and brought that watch with him. And I thought to myself, if there's ever a watch that I could wear in my, you know, green circle slopes that I'll be, you know, skiing down, it's a watch that was able to withstand the summit of K2. So, you know, if there's one watch I'd probably suggest, I'd say wear the one that the guy took to the one of the highest, if not the highest mountain in the world. You know, 40 millimeters, you know, very comfortable on the wrist. You know, it's, you know, water resistant because it's really more of a dive watch. But it was just so comfortable that honestly, at most times, I did not even know I was there. It was there. At one point, my phone had died. And I needed to get from one side of the mountain to the other side by 4 o'clock when my ride was coming to pick me up. Without that watch, I probably would still be stuck on that mountain, not knowing exactly what time the last ski lift actually took off. So I gotta say, just like Jake on that mountain, this watch may have saved my life.
Although slightly more KFC than K2.
Very much so.
good stuff. Cool, and what other news has there been this week then, Ricky?
Well, this is kind of the lull after SIHH, so there hasn't been a hell of a lot, but you mentioned something about your friends at Zenith.
Oh, my friends at Zenith. So I thought you were going in a different direction with one of my friends in Australia who has, I think, probably produced the best video on a certain subject to do with a certain...
Do we have to go there again?
Well, I don't normally like talking about my pal Archie, but the video he produced on the AP 1 minute before lunchtime watch is just phenomenal. There's something about people... I get to, although I'm not a swearer, I get told this regularly when I'm overseas, that people swearing in a Scottish accent and likewise people swearing in an Australian or New Zealander accent has a completely different timbre to it. You know, it can just be used in any circumstance. And the video that he films, which appears to be in a children's play park, is just a phenomenon. And I highly recommend that whatever room you listen to it in, if you happen to be in the office, it's definitely not safe for work. Put your headphones in and try and not let any wee out when you're listening to it. Go to the bathroom before you listen. That would be my advice.
So for anyone that doesn't actually know what we're talking about, this is Archie Luxury.
Yes.
Paul Plitter, who produces some of the craziest out there, wacky, gut-wrenching, inducing videos about watches that you can find.
Most of them
are
terrible, so, but this one is just... This is Oscar nomination stuff.
This is the needle in the haystack.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. So sorry, yes, so yeah. you can search out that at your discretion.
Well, I think we'll put a link in the show notes for that one, okay. And we'll just mark it cool. not safe for work. No, no. So that's obviously something I put to the back of my mind. I was talking more about the Zenith stuff that you were talking about earlier. Tell us more about that.
As those that listen to this may know, both Ricky and myself are Zenith fanboys, and we are both waiting on Zenith to launch at Baselworld a watch called the Zenith Defy Inventor, which will be launched there in 300 or maybe 500 pieces, and that uses the technology from the Zenith Defy lab. Again, there's an article on the website about it at www.scottishwatches.co.uk that you can go and avail yourselves on. But as well as it being the launch of that, this year is also the 50th anniversary of the El Primero movement. Again, there's loads online about it. Go to the Zenith website in particular. But they have released specifically in celebration of the 50th anniversary, and they chose to release it right in the middle of SIHH. So see, I told you they were going to be SIHH. they chose to release it in a art gallery, I think, in the middle of a show that they didn't feature at. And they have
Do you remember I told you that TAG had put out a press release about their new
Touchdown? Yes, it did.
And in it they said they released it at SIHH.
Yes, I saw that. Somebody from the press office had obviously got muddled up. Here's this TAG, released at SIHH. It's like, wait a minute, you're not at SIHH.
So what they did was they had the same press release on the UK website that said this was released at SIHH. Mm-hmm. On the American website, somebody had obviously kicked their arse from the legal department and they changed it to just say Geneva.
Yes. So
it was actually someone outside of the building. They actually had a tent set up. I'm not sure if you guys saw, but that's where it was released. So it was a very romantic kind of small gathering. Next time I'll make sure you guys get invited to that. But that's probably what the confusion is about. Yeah,
the Tag Heuer camper van.
For that.
Exactly.
Good stuff. What Zenith have actually released then is this 50th anniversary set, which is a big wooden box, which looks like a watchmaker's bench. And then there's a drawer, and in the drawer there are three watches with space for a fourth. The first watch is, I think, as close as they can get to a replica of the original El Primero, but with a crystal case back so you can see it. The second watch, and that has a timer on it to the second, it's a chronograph. The second one is what they're calling the El Primero 2, which is an updated all singing, all dancing, and it has a chronograph on it which is accurate to 1/10 of a second. It's a striking tenth. You need to kind of see it in the bezel is marked off in periods of 1/10 of a second rather than, as most bezels will be, 1/12 or 1/24. And then the third watch is taking the design cues from the original El Primero, which is this kind of coloured chronograph scales, and applying it to the Zenith Defy 21, which is a 1/100th of a second chronograph. And the idea is there's a fourth space for an as yet unreleased 1/1000th of a second.
I was going to say 1/1000th of a second.
Yes. What did I say?
How? No.
Okay.
How the hell are they going to do that?
Well,
how the hell?
Interestingly, TAG actually produced one of these a number of years ago. They have, Zach may know this better than I do from his experience at used watches, but there is such a thing that I think TAG have that they did a number of years ago. I don't know how it works, but it does. I mean, on the basis that in order to stop it, you have to see the thing that's happening and stop it at the exact moment that thing you're timing happens, e.g. somebody crossing a line. It's a complete nonsense to think that it's of any use whatsoever, because, you know, the inaccuracy of two people standing beside each other, both deciding when a certain thing finishes, you know, two people crossing a start-finish line, it's just not going to tell you anything. But just like my ball, it's just cool. And so if you could have a 1/1000th of a second, I mean, can you imagine how fast the hand is going to spin? The one on the tag.
Can you imagine the service intervals on that? They're like once a week.
Yes, probably.
I got to say that, so we in the United States, for football specifically, and when I say football, I mean American football, of course. time the 40-yard dash to try and see, you know, how fast you might be. Uh-huh. And I timed it with a normal watch, and it was about a 4.7 seconds. And then I timed it with the tag, the micro timer, I believe you're referring to.
Is that right?
To.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
It was about a 4.44. So that, yeah, I think that was more accurate, the faster time.
And did that put you further up the list on the league internally at Watchbox as to who has got the ability to run fastest away from the building with all the stuff in their pockets?
Yes, so I am the highest on the sort of security checklist because of my speed. You know, others are lower down for that exact reason. But, you know, it's something that they're always looking out, because at any time I might, you know, do a little dash out the door.
Runner. Good stuff. Grand. Mm. Excellent.
Well, I've got a question, Zach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've got a question for you. Between us, have you heard that Rolex might be buying Patek?
So, it is something that, you know, in the morning, like I said, I have my little routine, but a little routine for the office on our trading floor is we, you know, talk about anything that has come up. And that is something that, you know, lightheartedly kind of joked about. And I just can't see something like that actually happening. It's extremely fun to think about. It's, you know, it's one of those sort of earth-shattering changes to the watch industry at this time that, you know, you kind of don't want to happen, but at the same time would be so interesting that it would, you know, really change, you know, the next, you know, 10 years and 15, you know, 20 years in the watch industry. So I think it's very, very, you know, far from being actually reality. But if that happened, Rolex bought Patek, I mean, they'd have to, you know, put up, you know, just $8 billion or $10 billion, whatever that would end up being. But to have that monster of Rolex Patek, that I don't even know what would happen. I don't even know what our collectors would do, because that's probably the only thing that we would, you know, get orders for.
Well, if you think about it, if you look at all the other big houses like Richemont and LVMH and whatnot and Swatch, their combined brand housing is probably not. It's probably a lot bigger than Rolex and Patek combined anyway. Yeah. So although it would be a big thing, it wouldn't be the biggest thing.
I had a wee look at this, and Rolex, I mean, the problem is they don't publish accounts in a traditional way, so it's difficult to say just how much money they've got in the bank. Obviously, they don't have shareholders, so they can't raise it by selling shares. They would have to pay cash or use debt to do it. And Rolex isn't that much bigger, you know, scale bigger than Patek. So it would be a push for them to do it, but I dare say they could. If it was going to happen, the biggest house is LVMH by quite some distance over Richemont in terms of capital value. But, I mean, there are one or two others. I mean, you know, Apple. Apple want to get into the watch game properly. A wee purchase of Patek, that would just sort them out and just see that.
I that is such an interesting sort of, you know, thought, because Apple, I'm sure, would love to try and, you know, get their hand in, you know, mechanical watches. It might add to their Apple Watch, sort of making it, you know, so that watch lovers like us, you know, would maybe be more inclined to, you know, check out Apple Watches since, you know, we know that they're backing a, you know, a very historical brand like that.
Yeah.
That would be something very, very interesting. I just, you know, Apple, Patek, and I would probably say, you know, you really, they might, you know, have to rename, you know, one of the companies, because, you know, putting those two together is just such a weird pairing. But if anybody could maybe pull it off, Apple.
But then how about, if you think that's scary, how about Seiko buying Patek? How mental would the watch industry go if the Japanese took over Patek?
I can only imagine the angry mob that would be going down the streets of Geneva with pitchforks and maybe some, you know, torches, going up to Patek's door, you know, just in anger.
Yes.
would it be the worst thing for globalization of watchmaking? Absolutely not. I think that honestly would be great to try and merge, you know, sort of the company objectives and you know, actually get something that really is a global group with Japanese watches and, you know, Swiss watchmaking. That would be really fun. That one, again, is an interesting pairing, but has its own reasons for why it'd be very cool.
And if they went mental at the Japanese taking over, how about the Germans? How about VW Group? You know, they've got Porsche, they've got Bugatti, a wee purchase of a luxury watch brand. They've got the Porsche Design Studio, all of this kind of stuff.
So then I could get a nice perpetual calendar clock in my Volkswagen Beetle.
Yeah, there you go. That's it. Right next to the wee bit that you put your daffodil in, the wee flower pot. Exactly. Right next to that.
Just watch out for the emissions.
Good stuff. Anyway, it's always nice to speculate. Personally, when I had a look at it, I liked the idea that one of the companies that could afford to do it would be Lego. I thought the idea of Lego buying Patek would be quite fun, but I suspect if it is for sale, it will be some national fund that buys it. It will be the Bahrainian Sovereign Wealth Fund. That's the word I'm looking for. Mm. It'll be one of these sovereign wealth funds that buys it, which I think would be a shame. I think if it turned out they were for sale, I think it'd be good for a corporate entity to buy them rather than just being some gazillionaire buying it for a plaything.
Maybe a Russian oligarch or something of that nature.
Yes. Yeah,
that would be a little disappointing.
So there we go.
A takeover by Vostok, maybe?
Vostok. Brilliant. A big zero Patek. There we go. Oh, that's what I want. I want a Patek with a big zero on it.
I want a Patek Nautilus Scuba Dude. That's
what I want. Excellent. Right. Well, I think it's important we get on to some Watchbox chat. So,
well, we do have a guest.
We do have a guest, yes.
Speak about his own,
about his own thing. So the big question that I think is on everybody's lips in terms of Watchbox is that between Brian Govberg and Josh Thanos in the girlfriend stroke wife stakes, who's batting more above their weight?
Ooh, okay. So I am going to preface my answer.
We can send one edit to Brian and one edit to Josh, if you like.
Yes.
Or to their wives.
I got to say that the floor beneath me is just a layer of ice, and that ice is getting very thin. Know both of them very, very well. When I started at Watchbox, Josh was one of the first people to sort of take me under his wing and really, you know, broke down a lot of my, you know, bad habits and you know, got me, you know, in a place where I felt, you know, super comfortable, you know, in a sales position with Watchbox. And Brian has always been sort of like that older brother to me, who will come over with a smile on his face because he knows he's about to say something or do something to me that'll like get me to respond in a way. But I think both of them are probably tied on the shooting above par there.
Done.
Yes, yes, of course. Jess and Chelsea, I love you both. I think you guys are beautiful people. And I look forward to seeing you again in the future, hopefully.
Tell me, just as a quick aside, does anyone ever take, you know how sometimes if you're in school, someone that was being mean would stick a sign on your back, you know, kick me or something like that. Does anybody ever write out the sign with the word deployant on it and put it on Brian's back?
So, that is something I joke about pretty frequently in my videos. The first time I did that, Brian was like, you know, I love the show, but I think that there was one part in there.
Canceled.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's one part in there that I, you know, just didn't. And I was like, well, what was that, Brian? He said, you know, you made fun of my pronunciation on something. And I said to him, you know, there is people on YouTube that are constantly commenting this kind of stuff. I'm just pointing out the obvious. Mm-hmm. Nobody really cares because everybody knows that you're, you know, obviously one of the more knowledgeable people in the industry in terms of the watch market and stuff like that. So it's a little joke that we have with Brian here in the office. I think he's gotten to the point where we beat him down enough that he actually now starts to laugh about it. But maybe after this show, I'll try taping that to his back. And good. I'll do. I'll set my 1,000th timer to see how quickly I'm out of the office.
Okay, I'm gonna get one of those hats made that just says, you know, "Make Deployant Great Again," or something like that.
Well, it's between Deployant and the Friday Night Show when we always talk about vintage watches as well.
Vintage watches.
Yeah.
Very good. I'll let Ricky ask a slightly more serious question.
Serious questions for me? Jesus. Well, just to give listeners a little bit more background on Watchbox, just in case they haven't heard about you or they don't know too much, can you give us a little bit of background about Watchbox, where it came from, and what it is you guys really do then?
Yeah, absolutely. So originally, you know, in, let me bring you all the way back to 1916, and that's when Govberg Jewelers actually started. You know, Danny Govberg is, you know, really the head of our vision here at Watchbox. And, you know, his family had started that jeweler in Philadelphia in 1916. And they're now on to the fourth generation with Brian with the company. So Danny is somebody that you will see him walking around the office. He's looking at you in the face, but he's thinking about some grand idea that he's, you know, trying to plan and make happen. So that is basically, you know, how Watchbox got started, because Danny is such a visionary. It's something that, you know, he thinks of ideas that really nobody in the industry probably thinks that they can pull off. But Danny's just so confident in the people that he has around him and his vision that, you know, he ends up, you know, trying these crazy ideas. So Watchbox started, you know, as an idea between one of our other, you know, founders, Liam Wee. You know, they were longtime friends. You know, they met about 25 years ago. And Liam had started a business called Sincere Watch in both Singapore and Hong Kong. And he sold the company in 2012. You know, loved watches, still loves watches, and got back together with Danny. They, you know, started throwing around ideas, as Danny always does, and sort of this pre-owned vision that Danny had, you know, always thought about, but, you know, never knew exactly how he could, you know, execute this. They got together. They started planning this out. You know, they had the idea that, you know, we're going to go global with this. You know, the United States just is, you know, too small of a pond. It's crazy to say that, but too small of a pond for us to feel like we've, you know, really had an impact. So really they started out with the idea that we will have a U.S. headquarters and we will have a headquarters in Hong Kong. They, you know, brought in Justin Reese, who's sort of, you know, if we have these three kind of main figures that everyone thinks of when they think of Watchbox founders, we've got Danny, who is the innovator. We've got Liam, who is in the best way possible, sort of like that Hugh Hefner sort of character where, you know, he wears some of the coolest suits, coolest watches, always looks like the coolest guy in the room. And you know, he has all that experience. And then Justin is, you know, the young gun, hungry entrepreneur that, you know, is, you know, hungry to, you know, find us new ways of doing business. He works, you know, very hard on the platforms and stuff like that. But, you know, they basically got together, you know, started this company. And, you know, we are here today really because of a vision 25 years ago between, you know, Danny and Liam. So it's crazy to see, you know, where they started and now to see where we've become, because the future is going to be very interesting for us.
Good. And you guys have obviously expanded out with the States and are kind of sort of on a rampage across the world. So where have you opened new divisions?
Yeah, so I mean, we started in Philadelphia, our headquarters here. Then we got our Hong Kong office, which, you know, obviously headquarters in Philadelphia was the most established. So it had, you know, quite a few people in here, you know, 20 traders on the floor, our whole watchmaking department. Hong Kong sort of set up a mini headquarters based off of what we had here. So they have their own watchmaking facilities. They also have their own traders. You know, it's a smaller handful group. And so those are our main two headquarters. We have now our new sort of lounge showroom in Neuchâtel, Switzerland, which is actually run by Patrick Hoffman. He was at UN as their CEO for a while. And we sort of we got very lucky to be able to steal him from, you know, whatever he was planning on doing. So, you know, he got with Danny, they started talking, and now he runs our Switzerland office. We have South Africa now as well. We've got a we acquired Top Watch, and now they're under Watchbox. So they've got retail stores and trading floors, locations in Cape Town and Johannesburg. And coming up very soon, I know you guys were looking for more of an exclusive, and you know, this is the way to get it out there in the press. We are planning on making a move in the Middle East. So the location is something that I'm not even privy to yet at this time. But I will say in the next year, I would expect us to, you know, have a good setup in the Middle East, just because we think that market is growing and there's so much, you know, money going into watches that we just have to set up shop there and, you know, prove our global worth there.
And will you be applying for a free transfer to the Middle East branch?
So I'm trying to work out these little three-month trips with my boss, who has not okayed that yet. but I, you know, I think honestly, Hong Kong is somewhere that I'd love to spend, you know, at least 3 months, you know, on that side of things to see that market. But I think that going to the Middle East is something that I could not even imagine what that experience would be like. So if they offered it to me, I might have to say yes to that.
Cool. No, I think it would be a phenomenal, operation that you produce out there. So, looking forward to hearing more about that. So, how did you get involved? Were you, was watches always a thing, or did you come through a circuitous route?
So, my love of watches started when I was, you know, pretty darn young. My dad had. He was always into, you know, fashion and clothing and watches was part of that. So what I would do is when I was probably about, you know, 7, 8, 9, I would sneak into his closet when he wasn't there. I would throw on his, you know, nice ties. I'd throw on a blazer. I'd throw on some loafers. And then I would go to his
Please tell me there's some photos.
He probably has it and probably tried to put it on YouTube, but I reported it enough that YouTube actually took it down for inappropriate content, even though nothing wrong with that video. But, you know, yeah, maybe if we're lucky, that will get out there somewhere. But I used to try on his watches, and I would be at the breakfast table, and he would look at me wearing his watch, and I'm not, you know, nothing wrong, all that stuff. And he'd say, what are you doing? And I would just go, hey, I, you know, like to push these buttons and all that stuff. So he, you know, got me a Breitling when I was 13 because he would take me to work. He would have me doing some of his job because he thought it was hilarious for his clients to have a 13-year-old going through through his meetings. And I would wear my little Breitling and I – That's sort of where I started just falling in love with the idea of, you know, something on your wrist that is a machine that is able to tell time. So that's how I really started. He used to take me up to 47th Street in New York, which is sort of their jeweler's row. And he would go in there and haggle. And honestly, I've never seen a man more stressed out and, you know, just ready to burst than when he was going to these, you know, it looks like a flea market. And you're buying these watches and trying to get them for as cheap as possible because you never know really what you're getting when you go to 47th Street. But I saw him doing that and, you know, started to actually find out about more brands and stuff like that. And then fast forward, I graduated from Georgetown University, actually started working at Yelp because it was, you know, the first, you know, good opportunity that I saw that, you know, I could do sales, I could, you know, try and, you know, build that. And then someone called me, one of my friends, saying, you know, if you're not, you know, 100% sold on Yelp, they're starting this company called Watchbox. It just got a good investment. And I think that this global growth is going to be something that if you start early, you can really, you know, have a great impact. So cool. I jumped in and, you know, have been here for about a year and a half now. And honestly, it is without a doubt one of the coolest jobs that I can imagine myself having.
So how did you fall into doing the news reporting for YouTube?
So the person who called me, his name is Harrison Kendall, and he is the head of our video production team. Now, he knew that in high school, I did some musicals, I did some plays, and I had done some of my own videos.
You did some high school musicals, did you? Okay.
I did play Link Larkin in High School Musical. So you thinking I was Zac Efron, that's actually a great compliment of mine. That is wonderful. Thank you so much. He no knew that I had, you know, some sort of background in acting. And he, you know, said, I'd love to, you know, try on some shows that we're thinking about doing. So I went on. I did a quick little clip where I sing. I'm not sure if you guys have ever seen those videos where the ASPCA, they play the sad dog video. And in the background, it's got that song, like, in the arms of an angel. And I sang that for us to try and get us to go to Baselworld for me and CQ. And that's probably when I got most of the people in the office to come over to me and say, hey, I, you know, that song, it was pretty interesting, I gotta say, but the whole thing was, you know, was really good. So that's really when I started to get the push to, you know, do more videos. And our CMO, David Kaplan, who is awesome, is probably the best CMO you can have when you're trying to do video production and stuff like that. He's really pushed it, and you know, it's something that I look forward to every week that I get to do that, and I'm so lucky.
No, it's really good. Does everybody who is on the sales desk have the opportunity to do video if they like? Like, are we seeing on screen everybody that's there, or is there like a dozen people that we never see doing video content or podcast content?
So there's probably about 10 people on the floor that have done video content. At least in this Philadelphia office where our main production, it happens. I mean, Zoe and Josh in our Hong Kong office do videos all the time. But there's probably about 10 people that have done videos. Now, it's open, you know, really to anybody that wants to do it because, you know, from a company standpoint, we see it as it's a way for our clients to see who the people are that they're talking to on the phone. And, and you know, in pre-owned watches, it's a very weird thing online that you're buying a watch for. It could be $500. It could be $500,000 from somebody that you're just talking to over the phone. So they really push us to do shows and videos and any content we can because they want our clients to know exactly who we are. So, you know, I think as Danny grows the video production studio, we're having a new, you know, production sort of, you know, empty warehouse that they're turning into an awesome production studio in the future. It's going to be something that you'll see a lot more faces, and you'll get to know a lot more people, and that's something I'm definitely more excited about to see.
Well, that's brilliant. It was actually watching Tim's videos over the last couple of years that got me interested in the hobby and convinced me to go to Baselworld 2 years ago.
And he would like all his money back if it's all the same that he spent on watches. He would send you the invoice. Would you like the invoice in dollars or is pounds okay? And you can do the conversion yourself.
Yeah, okay. All right, I'll make sure that's taken care of. Tim is, from just a value standpoint for the company, you know, you've got Danny, who is just an innovator. You've got all of the pieces that we have. But personally, I think that Tim is probably the most valuable thing we have in this company. Because of his reach, his knowledge. He's unlike anyone else. I mean, the man can talk for 30 minutes straight, and it probably from an audience perspective seems like everything is pretty scripted. But when you actually look at, you know, what his script looks like, it is amazing how he's able to go through every episode nonstop, every fact that you want to hear about the watch. You know, what the person that made this watch was eating that morning is something that Tim pulls up in his videos. Like that, that kind of stuff is something that it was very intimidating when I came to Watchbox at first. You know, I'm just the new kid. I, you know, look over when he walks through the office, and now it's something that I've come to, you know, be a lot more comfortable in, and I ask him questions about things that, you know, I might not know, and really from a value standpoint is just priceless for a company like this.
And just you may not be able to answer this, or may not want to answer this, but does Tim have any other hobbies that he's just as obsessive and knowledgeable about? Like, you know, does he collect Star Wars toys or something, and he knows, or is he a fan of silent movies?
I think it's cycling and sports cars he's quite into.
You're exactly right. I've seen Tim probably the happiest in his life at three different things. One is watches. The two is cycling. Mm-hmm. You know, he cycles all over. When the weather is nice enough in Philadelphia, he'll cycle all around the city. And that's, he's smiling as he's doing that, so I know he's happy there. And the third one is exactly what you touched on, the cars. Danny has a Bentley, a Continental GT, that Tim had the opportunity to drive. And there was somebody in the passenger seat taking a video of Tim driving the car, and you would have thought he was a 12-year-old getting his first PlayStation for the first time at Christmas, because he was giddy. And so those are the three happiest times I've ever seen Tim, is when he's with watches, cycling, or in a very nice car going pretty fast.
Excellent. Well, listen, before we obviously wrap things up, we're obviously based up here in Scotland, and in the UK there's a thriving community of people that are interested in getting a hold of decent quality luxury timepieces, new and obviously pre-loved. So if we were to sort of look for watches that you guys have in stock, either in the States or over here in Switzerland, what's the process of buying or getting in touch with you guys? What would we do?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you know, Watchbox in general, it's global e-commerce platform for buying, selling, and trading. And the main thing on that is global. And we don't want it to be like we are a U.S. company that is trying to do everything in its power to make it work for other countries in any region. Really look at it like we have a global inventory. And what that means is, you know, we have watches here in Philadelphia, we have watches in Hong Kong, we have watches in Switzerland and South Africa. But if someone, let's say, you know, they're in Scotland and they want to come see a watch, you know, take a trip over to Switzerland and see a bunch of watches, we will have any of those watches that might not already be there sent there, so that you can, you know, look at any watch you really want to see that we have in inventory. Mm-hmm. I think that is something that makes us different from most companies out there, that we're able...
So as well as being online, you're sort of bricks and mortar, you've got an area where people can maybe book an appointment, jump in a plane quite cheaply from Scotland, fly over and check things out in person.
Yeah, I mean, you know, every one of our offices and locations... are really open to the public in different aspects. You know, some have normal business hours and some are appointment only. But really, if anyone is ever interested in, you know, checking out any of the watches we have and whatever the closest office to you is, we will be more than happy to set up an appointment where we've got any watch that you're looking to see, and make it work for you. Because we think that, you know, for an online business, that all of our, you know, business really goes through this online platform and all of the, you know, the app that we have and all of that stuff. It's something that we still want to have that white glove service that you really get from an in-person touch. So it's something that we really push. So we welcome it. And if anybody, you know, wants to see any watches, you know, they can call the closest office to them, set up a time to see it. I mean, you put a small deposit down and we'll send any watch from any of our offices to that location. And, you know, we'll sit you down with a specialist that you can, you know, go over it.
If somebody hasn't got the facility or the time to come across and they're looking to order online, obviously you guys have got high resolution photos, videos online of all the watches. If they bought something, is there a chance that if they're not 100% satisfied, they can return it? Is that an option for folks?
Yeah, absolutely. So part of the business is that most of the people that we deal with are not able to, you know, come see the watch before we send it out. You know, we have a 7-day return policy. So from the date that you receive the watch, you have 7 days to make sure it is the perfect watch for you. If not, you let us know. Mm-hmm. We'd be happy to send you a shipping label to send the watch back. We do an inspection on it just to make sure that the watch is in the same condition as it went out. And then it's a full refund, no questions asked. That's something that's super important to us because, you know, some companies, you know, they have these sort of, you know, blurred lines, you know, return policy because, you know, they're not as confident maybe in the watch that they're sending out and they want to try and find ways to, you know, get out of it if, you know, something was to go wrong. We're so confident in the watches that we are putting up on our website because of, you know, our watchmaking facility, you know, their authorized service center for, you know, so many of the brands out there. And they're all, you know, CW21 certified, so they're the highest quality watchmakers you can have. So we're so confident in the product that we're actually putting on our website as a pre-owned luxury watch that we're you know, happy to take it back because really most of the reason that, you know, 99% of the reason that somebody's returning a watch is just because it wasn't the right watch for them. It's not there was mechanical issues. It's not, you know, the strap was worn, you know, all that stuff. It's just because it wasn't a right fit. And, you know, we're more than happy to make sure that the customer has the exact perfect watch for them because, you know, what we preach here is buy what you love. So if you don't love it, let us know and, you know, we'll help you find something that you really do.
You'd mentioned there about an app. Can you give us a little bit more information about that?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, after you go and check out the podcasts of this wonderful show on, you know, Google Play and you know, I subscribed on my iTunes. Go over Good to point. The App Store, download the Watchbox app because there is a lot of different awesome things that you can do. We put industry news up there from a number of publications. So it just, you know, collects and aggregates a lot of different news sources on there. You get our videos from the Watchbox Studios. One really cool feature that I always have fun playing with is we actually have a augmented reality try-on.
Yes,
so if you're interested, yeah, if you're interested, you know, we send you a sort of like a rubber little strap that you put on, and you go to the app, go to that augmented reality section, and you're able to try on watches on your wrist and see how they look because, you know, that is something that a lot of customers were, you know, complaining about. I'm not sure how it's going to look on my wrist. So that's something that Danny, you know, with his awesome ideas, got to have happen for our app. And that's, it's such a cool little feature. Yeah. You know, you can store your collection in the app and, you know, track that and see, you know, market valuation on your own collection, you know, add watches to your collection, maybe that you're just, you want to have in the future and, you know, sort of keeping an eye on the market. And then obviously through that app, you can also, you know, do shopping, buying, selling, trading and all of that good stuff. And you know, can contact any of us through the app.
I use the app on a daily basis just to keep a track of what's happening out and about in the news. I find it really useful. It's great. And it's free. And it's Scotland, so we're always interested in free stuff. So there we go. Good stuff.
You got that over here too as well, so don't worry about that.
it's a Scottish immigrant side of and the Irish of side of the East Coast.
So one of my favourite, I don't know what you would call it, probably series that on Watchbox TV on YouTube is the Classroom series where you sort of do deep dives into different things. It's history, it's watchmaking, it's how to care for your watches, how to do these things. And what other shows do you guys bring out weekly?
So we have quite a few shows that we put on our YouTube channel. I have my show, The Watch Report. And then a bunch of other traders on the floor have their own shows. The Trading Desk with Josh and Jason. We have The Watch Insider with Brian Govberg. Tim, obviously, you know, a major part of our channel, has his show, Monday Mailbag, but is, you know, on really everything that we do, whether it's Brian's show, you know, The Classroom, as you mentioned, you know, really just gets involved in everything because, you know, he's so valuable to us with his knowledge. But, you know, in terms of The Classroom that you mentioned, it's something that we love to be able to bring in people who might not know too much about the industry, might not know too much about watches. And it's a very good way of us to, you know, teach people, you know, things that, you know, if they were to talk to somebody who's, you know, very, very much into watches, or you know, were to read a forum of on watches, you know, people would not understand most of the things that they're, you know, seeing or hearing, and we want to clear that up. So I mean, we've got shows where, you know, the classroom talks about Rolex nicknames and you know, how to really buy a pre-owned watch and feel secure about it, really just, you know, educating these viewers. So that, you know, they can have a educated conversation with, you know, anybody about watches. And, you know, we want to make sure that at the end of the day, that the customers that come to us and work with Watchbox, if you buy a watch, that's great. But, you know, what's most important to us is that you walk away with a little bit more knowledge than maybe you had before. So that's, you know, what's a great thing about the classroom that we've got there.
Well, there was a part of the classroom season, I think it was the last one that was on there, and it was Mike Michaels talking about do's and don'ts with your watch. And obviously you guys have got a service centre, so you do repairs and you're there, you're a business, you're there to make money. But he's busy telling people, don't use watch winders because it wears out the components, it wears out the automatic winding system. To give that level of honesty to people where he's actually stopping people breaking things and bringing it to you guys to get repaired, it shows, you know, the company and the videos that you put out, there's truth and reliability in there and honesty, which sometimes you don't get from people on YouTube.
I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. The fact that we have somebody like Mike Michaels doing videos, obviously, you know, his stuff is not going to be for everybody. You know, it's a very in-depth approach to the watchmaking side of things that most people don't have any idea about. And you know, there's a lot of people out there that, you know, really don't care. But for those people that are interested in finding out, you know, more about how these specific watches are put together, the finishes, you know, the best ways to, you know, keep them in the best condition possible. You know, that's why, you know, these Mike Michaels shows are, you know, what they are. Because it's perfect for those people that really want to learn more. And I think that, you know, Mike Michaels is the kind of person who shoots very straight, and you know, he's going to tell you exactly what the truth is and wants you to keep your watch, you know, in the best condition possible.
No, definitely the winders thing was really good, and also there was a couple other bits and pieces. Like, people think of the depth rating on a watch, 100 meters, 200 meters, 300 meters, as being how deep you can go in without thinking of impact of water, or how going into a shower can affect seals and lubricants and things like that. It made you think more.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people don't even think about it, but, you know, you could be in 10 feet of water, but if you move your hand quick enough, you know, that pressure is, you know, something that could be 50 meters of pressure on the watch. So, you know, these are the things that people don't really think about that Mike Michaels is able to cover with people. And I think that's a great thing.
No, definitely. I think of him as, like you just touched on there, if you're interested in watches, it's like somebody that's interested in cars. They look at a Ferrari and they think that's great. When you're listening to Mike Michaels, it's like listening to a master mechanic talk about camshafts and turbochargers and aftermarket headers and all those kind of things. It's just that it's another layer to the hobby. It's really appreciated. So yeah, that's fantastic. Anything else you want to cover there, Rick? I heard you
I just wanted to see a celebrity death match between Mike Michaels and Tim Mosso. I don't know if you get that show. I think that was a stateside show. The two of them together in a ring, going toe for toe on horological knowledge. Jason Mayne can arm them with whatever knives or weaponry is kicking about his desk at Watchbox. But I think as a Christmas special in your new warehouse, we want a boxing square, or actually no, one of those cages for mixed martial arts. What are the hexagons? That's what they're called, isn't it? I would put the two of them in there.
So that's actually funny that you mentioned it, because Josh Thanos is really into MMA, and I wrestled for, you know, 15 years. So, you know, that's something that we've already got set up.
All right, so we could actually have like a league table. We could start you all. It'd be a knockout to see who's the best.
You know, Mike Michaels, he is probably one of, you know, the most intimidating men in the office, just because he comes in on his Harley. Actually, I'm not sure if it's a Harley, but I know it's a motorcycle. And, you know, you can hear, I'm in the garage, you know, it's 9 a.m. And that's the first thing I hear in the morning. And then he goes in and he's, you know, crushing it on the watchmaking.
Yeah. Cool. I can imagine the Watchbox Battle Royale.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
That'd be good. Perfect. Well, listen, I'd like to thank you very much for your time today. Obviously, we've been taking you away from the floor and doing your actual work, so it's really appreciated.
Yeah, thanks, Zach.
And if people want to check out more about Watchbox yourself, where can they find more about you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd probably say that our Watchbox Studios YouTube channel is probably the best place to, you know, find out the most about us. You know, we've got all of our shows and a lot of, you know, good information on there about, you know, how the company started and, you know, where we're headed. So I think that's probably the best place. But, you know, always, you know, go on our website and, you know, always available to chat. If anybody, you know, has any questions, you know, usually end up giving out my cell phone number. So that's something that, you know, you might end up getting if you have any questions there.
I think before you go, or before we all go, myself and Ricky, we should maybe try and give, this happens sometimes over here in football commentary on the radio, which is that people give each other words that they've got to drop in. So I don't know if me and Ricky can, off the top of our heads, think of a word that Zach has to drop into his next watch report.
Crevice.
Yeah, I think, you know, I can work that in. You know, I'll try and work that in with somehow Brian, if I can. So if Crevice and Brian, Crevice will be definitely in the next show for you guys. So don't worry about that.
Excellent. Good stuff. Well, thank you very much.
Perfect. Well, guys, thanks very much. If you want to check out more about The Watchbox, the website address there is thewatchbox.com. As Zach mentioned, you can check out The Watchbox app on the Google Play Store and the iTunes App Store. And if you want to check out what we've been up to on our website, it is www.scottishwatches.co.uk. We've got lots of photos, video, reports on all the latest happenings, plus lots of SIHH coverage from last week. And you can catch us on Instagram at Scottish Watches. So do you want to take us out, Rick?
Well, as we draw another show to a close, we thank you all very much for listening. We hope you will all check in again next time. So it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.